The whole thing is crazy. The guy drove us there from Bangkok in 4 hours, and that was our orientation time. So when we got there, he said, here's your motorbike, here's your apartment, there is where the refugee camp is. You're going to have to drive there every day. And, you know, there are some books that have been kept there on the project, and you're going to have to learn about how to raise chickens and pigs through these books. And it was trial by fire. We had to make it up as we went along. So there were just a series of problems. But if you didn't fix the problem, you were going to have a big failure. And that taught us a lot more than just the abstraction of reading the book.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast. I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And I'm your co-host, David Rathemeyer.
We're really excited about the conversation today. I don't know that we're ever not excited about a conversation or we wouldn't have it and we wouldn't do this.
It's true.
But we get to introduce you to somebody who definitely hits our, you know, extraordinary to ordinary thing in the sense that this is not an ordinary person. Seth Barnes is an extraordinary individual, probably always has been. Perhaps not somebody that you have known about in the sense that he's famous on everybody's lips, but maybe you ought to. I have had the great good fortune of meeting Seth through the podcast. He contacted us because he listened to our podcast, and immediately in having a first conversation, you know, it's one of those conversations where you're like, the person the other end of this line has so much to teach me that I'm not going to have time in this conversation. And by God's good graces, it wasn't just one conversation. And so we have been blessed to not only have had multiple conversations with Seth, but also to be working with him and some of his phenomenal team and running the AI track inside of our Ascend program. So we will get on to talking about artificial intelligence in this podcast, and that's an important part. But honestly, the most interesting part of the podcast is Seth's own personal journey, the work that he does through his organizations, which we really want you to hear about. And then, you know, we were trying to build up the talk to about AI, and the story right before we talk about the AI eclipses anything that we'd ever talk about with the AI and is definitely worth the admission to hear. And so it's our pleasure to introduce you to a fascinating individual, somebody who's doing really essential and important work, who has some really interesting perspective and some experience, and it's just an honor and pleasure to have him on the podcast. So please enjoy our conversation with Seth Barnes. Seth Barnes, welcome to the Be Unbound podcast. It's really fun to have somebody who we got to meet through the podcast. And as far as I'm concerned, if that's all the podcast had accomplished, I'd be thinking we'd be doing pretty good because you and I have had some really fascinating and fun conversations. I've learned a ton in my conversations with you. But more than that, you have a fascinating story. And it's one of these cool things where I knew what you did long before I knew who you were or even your name. I was familiar with your program. I had some friends and we've actually had some students who have gone through it. And so it was really fun to get to know the man behind the curtain, so to speak, although I don't know that you spend a lot of time behind the curtain. And so welcome to the Be Unbound podcast. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, so Seth, I know you as an entrepreneur in a slightly interesting space. And what I mean by that is I think you could have been a successful entrepreneur in any space, but you have been particularly effective in the mission space. And you run a really interesting program. We want to talk about that. But before we give that away, tell us a little bit about the background, because entrepreneurs may be born, but they have to practice somewhere. And so tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I've always been a curious person. As a boy, you know, I was always in a book. I was always trying to learn more, not necessarily conventionally. And then at some point, you know, as I became a teenager, I realized I was poor. I needed money. And I did the usual things in terms of starting a business, mowing lawns. And then in college later, I started a cleaning service and, you know, just a way to put money in the pocket and not necessarily connected to any kind of mission or purpose, but other than, you know, I needed to go out on dates and therefore I needed to have some money in my pocket. It wasn't until college, really my senior year, where I had been on some mission trips and I understood that, you know, things happen on a mission trip can't happen in a classroom. And I had asked God, you know, use me in a way that there are needy people, even people on the brink of death, that I could go and touch and make a difference in their lives. And I was kind of frustrated because he hadn't to that point. But all of a sudden, we learned in 1979, 80, about the nation of Cambodia and the genocide, the killing fields that were there. 2 million people out of 8 million murdered. And there was the need to go and to help them. And it happened rather quickly. I had another kind of experience planned for my senior year. I'd intended to, you know, date my future wife and have fun with my buddies and, you know, take a pretty light load of classes. But this opportunity came up. I got on a plane and really spent much of my senior year in a refugee camp making a difference. It changed my life. You know, I realized I've got so much, they've got so little, and I can put people back on their feet and demonstrate the love of Christ. And it marked me for life. I've always wanted to help the poor. And as I looked in scripture, I saw that Jesus was the same way. That's where he hung out. And if I wanted to disciple young people to follow Jesus, I needed to pay attention to what he was interested in, which is helping the poor, the least of these, the poor in spirit, especially. That was kind of, those are my roots. And from there, you know, it's kind of the mix of, I don't know, gifting or curiosity I had as an entrepreneur and this heart to follow Jesus into hard places that ultimately led me to start a thing called Adventures and Missions and the World Race.
Well, I want to come back to, we want to talk about the World Race in a moment, but when you talk about Cambodia and the killing fields, the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot, tell me a little bit, you know, for a genocide that had, I mean, first of all, the numbers are noteworthy, period, in terms of any kind of tragedy. When you take them and you kind of put them in the context of the place that happened, and so, yeah, you know, you're looking at it per capita, it's even more. To me, it's one of the great sort of, I don't know, overlooked tragedies of the 20th century.
Right.
The impact is absolutely breathtaking, and yet most people aren't very familiar with it. So I am familiar with it, and so I'm curious a little bit about, yeah, you said I spent this time in a refugee camp. Tell us a little bit what that was like, because we're talking about a generational event that really Cambodia is still not fully recovered from.
Yeah. So I went to a refugee camp right on the border of Thailand and Cambodia, and the refugees would spill over into not just this camp, there are multiple camps up and down the border. And at our refugee camp, the idea was to help them in a practical way and help them by engaging in agricultural projects. And so what we did was got a bunch of these refugees, and 20 of them had 5 pigs each. We got little piglets, and we taught them how to raise these pigs and ultimately to sell them, and they got to keep the profit. And it was substantial. It got them back on their feet. Same thing with chickens. We had, I don't know, like 30 or so chicken farmers. We'd buy little chicks and they'd raise them. They'd sell them for profit, keep the profit. And it was a way, you know, it's called microcredit. And it really showed me that tangibly there are ways to help people. You don't even have to preach the gospel. What you're doing is showing that Jesus cares about them in tangible ways. So that's what we did. And I just, like, the needs were so great. You know, we could move from there to sewing projects and to agricultural projects that were different, fish and ducks. And, you know, there's just all kinds of ways to help people if you're paying attention.
So there's a couple of questions that came up about that for me. Did you have an agricultural background, or was this something where you were trained and then kind of flipped that?
No, the whole thing is crazy. I mean, it took a guy like me. I like risk. I've got an appetite for risk. And so I had a 4-hour, the guy drove us there from Bangkok in 4 hours. And that was our orientation time. And it was all a function of questions. Like if you had questions, you got answers. So when we got there, he said, here's your motorbike. Here's your apartment. There is where the refugee camp is. You're going to have to drive there every day. And, you know, there are some books that have been kept there on the project. And you're going to have to learn about, you know, how to raise chickens and pigs through these books. And it was trial by fire. We had to make it up as we went along. The first thing we found out is that there was like a fly epidemic. And as we looked around, we saw that there wasn't an adequate drainage solution for the pigs, that all their sewage was going into one big pot that was growing these flies, and flies were coming out by the thousands. We had to deal with that. So there were just a series of problems that if you didn't fix the problem, you were going to have a big failure. And that taught us a lot more than just the abstraction of reading a book.
So from an entrepreneurial standpoint, that's fascinating, right? So you come in, you basically get handed a project. The pressure, I was just teaching a class earlier today, and I was telling the students that, you know, we do project-based education. This is for one of our high school groups. And I said, you know, a project has to have an idea. Then you have lots of ideas, so it has to have focus. And that has to have pressure. You know, ideas don't get done unless there's pressure, you know?
Right.
And so I said, you know, whether if you can generate that yourself, so much the better. But projects get done under pressure. So you clearly, I mean, the idea was you're going to go to Cambodia. The focus is you're at a refugee camp. And the pressure is flies, pigs, and people.
So ran out of water. There's just all kinds of issues that we had.
So that's the entrepreneurial side. But I'm interested on the other side of it as well. So we're talking about, you know, suffering on an almost unimaginable scale. So, you know, you didn't say much about your background other than that, you know, like most teenagers at some point you figure out you're poor. But, you know, poor is a relative term if you're coming from anywhere in North America.
Exactly.
So, you know, you see this happen all the time with your experiences. You take young people in the missions field. But take me back to that time for you. You know, help us see that through your eyes when you're coming from, you know, the United States, poor being I can start a cleaning company. And you walk into a refugee camp where, you know, I'm assuming statistically nobody in the camp hasn't lost substantial amounts of people they know and are related to the murderous regime. Help me sort of understand that or see that from your perspective as you saw that for the first time.
Yeah, it was, I loved it. I was just learning every day new things. It was hard. But the hard things, the challenges, how do you see those challenges? I saw them as challenges, not as problems. It's like the obstacle is the way. It's the positivity that you bring to it allows you to overcome the problems. And as you see people actually benefiting from your actions and removing problems one by one, I don't know. To me, it didn't hit me as trauma. It didn't hit me as, you know, I was prepared for the worst. I was prepared to be picking up, you know, starving people every day. They weren't starving by the time that they came to our refugee camp. They'd had a few meals. They were, you know, living in very simple and minimal kind of environments, but they did have food and they did have some shelter. And there was this opportunity to make a difference that was tangible. And so it wasn't as maybe overwhelming as you might think it would be. At least it wasn't for me. For other people, it probably would have been.
So I'm curious, Seth, it's amazing just how practical and tangible of needs that you were able to meet there. But you talked briefly about how like that was, it was ministry doing that. And I'm curious, like, did you see, or if you saw it, what kind of spiritual change did you see in the people that you were serving and working with there?
You know, I wasn't as kind of tuned into the world of the spirit as I am now. I was kind of oblivious. I'm just kind of living my life. And yeah, I trusted Jesus and I was there because of him. But I don't know if this is just a male thing or if I was just a punk and didn't pay attention. But yeah, going back there now, I'm much more attuned. And as we've, you know, developed the world race, and I thought that might be a journey like I had, a more practical journey. It turns out it was more of a journey to identity. And young people who needed maybe what I lacked, which was a deep relationship and intimacy with the Father and things that, gosh, it would have been great to have learned at an earlier age. But I, you know, frankly, I was obtuse and I was motivated by the typical kinds of things that young people are motivated by.
So you go to Cambodia, you get presented with an overwhelming set of problems, and then you also have some practical opportunities to adjust to those problems, and you do. And so the first question is, you know, that's, you know, I don't know, refugee camp, you said 8 pigs, a couple of chickens. We've got a loaves and fishes type situation here.
Yeah.
So how, at what point did you start to see something, you know, because I think in most humanitarian crises, what you have is you have people that walk in and say, I was there, what I did mattered almost nothing at all. I had almost no impact, and you kind of walk away from it. You're not saying that. So at what point did you start to see some impact? And then I want to kind of go on and see how you leverage that forward, obviously. But I'm just still curious about, you know, you said there are problems to be solved. Most people don't walk into refugee camps and think that a problem is going to be solved. And so tell us about that, because I think I'm curious to hear about the progress there.
I mean, the first problem I was alluding to was the flies. I mean, it was a plague of biblical proportions. Had to do something. And right away we drained it. And even that process wasn't good enough. I mean, you had to do all kinds of stuff to get rid of these, just the maggots that were breathing, the flies, and we put lime on that, and then the ducks ate the sewage with lime in it, and they died, and that was a bad thing. I mean, there were problems that we solved improperly, but at the same time, you did see progress. And when you took the pigs or the chickens to market and you actually sold those and you saw the money in the pocket of the poor refugee, that was tangible. And it, you know, people can say what they want about toxic charity. Charity can't be toxic, and you can come in with a lot of really improper motives or bad methodologies. I was fortunate to work with something that was more practical. And after that, after, you know, graduating from college, I realized that I really loved kind of microcredit, and I went on to establish microcredit agencies in Indonesia and the Dominican Republic. And you can look at the one that I established in the Dominican Republic, and it's, I don't know, got maybe 40 or so different offices and maybe $500 million in loans going out, hundreds of thousands of jobs created 45 years later. You know, I was blessed to be a part of that and to have a methodology that works. But even that, frankly, wasn't enough for me later on. I realized I can put money in pockets, but I haven't impacted the heart. That was really where life change would occur. And that's when I began to focus more on discipleship as opposed to just economic remediation.
All right. So you go to Cambodia, come back, you finish college, you get involved in microcredits. You're doing that. Obviously, you're succeeding on some level of scale. And then you're looking to do this heart change, and you're looking to, you know, replicate a little bit of your experience to some extent. You didn't say that, but I'm reading between the lines a little bit here. So take us to, so lots of people start missions organizations. Lots of people run missions organizations. Lots of people do short-term missions organizations. But before I met you or even knew who you were, I saw your organization as something on a sort of different scale and doing something a little different. So tell us about it and you know, what was the genesis for it? And then tell us a little bit about what it does.
So, you know, my heart and life had been changed by the experiences overseas. I wanted to give the same sorts of experiences to others. Problem is that people weren't me. They came from different places and different motives. And so we did short-term missions for a while. But what I found is that people needed more time. And if I was going to disciple them, or others were going to disciple them, you know, try and connect them to Jesus and to walk with Jesus, then we needed more time. And that's where I started the World Race. And it's been about 20 years now, 20 years ago. And I knew when we started it, that this was something that, man, it had legs. It was hitting the zeitgeist at just the right time. And the millennials, more idealistic than Gen Z, they loved it. It was an opportunity to go and explore and to do things that others, you know, they'd never had that opportunity. They'd never been trusted maybe with kinds of open-ended opportunities that we gave them. And on top of that, when we did the first one in 2006, we added the component of a race just to kind of give them something exciting to talk about in addition to missions. And that was spectacular in terms of the SEO that it generated. And the whole thing generated such an incredible SEO that it became like the top missions organization in connecting people to the mission field.
So describe what that is. So you mentioned World Race a couple of times. And yeah. So for our audience, describe what the World Race is. Maybe start with that first one and maybe a little bit what it is today.
Yeah, just a year working in a variety of settings around the world, different kinds of ministries, volunteering basically. And so you're going in, you're working with a local partner, and you know, in Matthew 10, Jesus says to look for a person of peace, to look for somebody who is connected to the local community, has trust that you can work through. So you're working under them. That absolves a lot of the issues of this kind of toxic charity that happens with a lot of short-term mission trips. So in a year, we went to 11 different countries and 11 different engagements. We went in teams of typically about 25 or so. We had leaders and coaches that would meet them along the way. And they learned to live in community, and they learned to kind of dive deep into who they were in Christ. And gosh, it grew so fast. The first trip, we had about 24 people, but within a year or two, we had hundreds of people going. And I knew that God wanted me to grow it, but I didn't know how fast, and I didn't know how big. And that became kind of a problem. I think we grew too fast. And a lot I learned about scaling that I've applied to other, you know, businesses and ministries that I've invested in over the years. And as I look at AI and as I look at Gen Z, you know, those lessons are still with me. And I'm like, okay, we can only scale with excellence here. We can only scale with quality of people that have been trained and that kind of thing. And so I'm still around, still haven't retired, and I'm still eager to invest in young people to help them to be the change that the world needs. And that happened because of, you know, 20 years of experimentation along the way in different kinds of environments, different kinds of ministries, some that made a difference, some that made a mess. And I'm not afraid to make a mess. I mean, in life, is if you look at successful people, they're also messy people. They're people that have failed a lot. And I have failed a lot. I'll own the failures. And at the same time, people give you probably more credit than you deserve for the successes. Usually it's a team, and I've had great people along the way when we have succeeded.
So assume we join the World Race, so they're going to be volunteering, they're going to be working with teams on the ground.
Yeah.
But give us it's going to be over a course of a year. And I know you, and just so, you know, we'll have the links in our show notes, there's various trips of multiple lengths. So just make sure the audience knows you can find some different kinds of experiences. But I think your flagship program is the year. So, you know, give us a sense of the scale. How many different places would a student be in a year going through this?
So the original model was to go to 11 countries in 11 months. And a lot of travel, a lot of packing up bags, a lot of roughing it along the way. Got your sleeping bag, you got your little tent, and you're liable to pitch up. And in the first trip, they actually, at some points, like in Thailand, you know, they didn't know anybody. And so the Lord would lead them, they'd pray. God would send them to somebody. Like once it was a Buddhist monk, and they told their story, and the Buddhist monk said, hey, there's room here in my temple, and they pitched their tents inside the temple. And so you have all these crazy experiences along the way. Sometimes you're dealing like in India with a church planting guy who had, I don't know, to this point, he's planted like 30,000 churches. What can we do? Well, we can often train and teach, and we can come alongside somebody who's in the church planting process to reach out to those in their villages and in tangible ways. And sometimes we're just, you know, we'd be painting or building. You know, there's lots of different kinds of ministry that you can engage with. I think the variety is important. As a young person, you want to see, yeah, you know, there are things that I'm not gifted at, I don't like, and then there's things that maybe I should try my hand at.
So as, you know, I'm thinking 11 countries in 11 months, the variety of places, you know, I'm living inside of a Hindu temple. I'm dealing with India, which, I mean, India is an assault
Buddhist
defenses
temple.
Anyhow.
Yeah.
Buddhist, I'm sorry, apologies. And so, you've got 20 years of those. And so I know this might be an impossible task, but, you know, sometimes you can feel it most through a story. So what is one of your more interesting stories that you've had over the last 20 years of a student's experience? I mean, I know you can have an endless amount to pull from, but give us one.
Oof. So many stories. I'll give you two stories. So, you know, there's the kind of the miracles that you see. And I think we probably had at least two incidences where we came across a situation, somebody had just died. And we prayed for them. This happened once in Cambodia and once in South Africa. In South Africa, there's a young boy that had been hit by a car, and they pulled the sheet over him. Our two guys arrived there, and they pronounced him dead. And they asked if they could pray for him. And the people said, sure. I mean, but how ridiculous. And they prayed for him and kind of commanded him to come back to life. And he did. And you go, whoa, how many times do we read the Bible? And we say, well, that was something that the disciples did, but not for me, not for now. And they experienced that, yeah, this is for now. So, you know, I think that changes a life. And the guy that actually prayed that prayer, he'd been like an alcoholic before coming on the race, gave his life to Christ. And I think he's a pastor now. You know, that marked him for life.
Slight impact.
Wow. We've had so many incidences of healings, radical healings, just in our training times where we're, you know, one lady is going to go on the race. She's a dancer. She shows up with a broken ankle. And the guy who's training us in how to pray for healing asks anybody like her to come up. She comes up, he prays for her, her ankle is healed, and she goes dancing off the stage, you know, and that's just like that happened a lot. People who were blind, people who couldn't hear, but also there are heart changes. I was a coach, and we had a group that was our biggest group of about 60, and we went to Guatemala, and I felt like God was going to actually move in our group to kind of do it like, I don't know, a revival in a way where if the guys would just, especially the guys, there were only 14 guys and the rest were women, would show up with vulnerability and maybe confess some of the things that they had done that they're not proud of, God might release his spirit. And wow, it was one guy who was a soldier in, I believe it was Iraq, and had all this stuff that he had done. He confessed it and began to shake some of the women and just crying and sobbing because it spoke to their hearts. And by the time that week ended, just about everybody had shared at that level, and we had bonded so tight. And so just the Spirit of God came. And man, to see the community that still exists and to see them continue to stay in touch with one another, it's fantastic. And, you know, that kind of thing is on offer if we'll kind of take God at his word and take risks and trust that maybe he'll show up.
Well, thank you. I'm not so sure that when I asked you to share a story, I was expecting, I wasn't expecting that kind of answer.
Yeah.
Traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student want something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend.
So I almost feel like, you know, it's almost like burying the lead now if we talk about anything else. So, but pivoting off of, you know, a child coming right back to life, it's like, well, I think the rest of it's going to be anticlimactic. But Seth, we had, to me, this is part of the fascination of who you are. And so maybe if I can pull these threads back together, if we're listening here, it's like, okay, we have a young man who's an entrepreneur in college, who goes into Cambodia and applies his entrepreneurial skills in one of the worst genocidal disasters of human history, you know, and experiments with limed ducks and overflied pigs. And so, you know, doing those things, and then comes out and does, and, you know, and I know you're leaving out a lot. There's a lot of entrepreneurial things that have happened, and you were honest and said some things failed and some things didn't. But you have a 20-year ministry that has moved people all around the world, literally, and in the process has built communities, obviously served a lot of people, but has created, and, you know, let's be clear here, God moves where God decides. But there's some aspect of creating the opportunities for that. And so you've been blessed and you've been able to respond to that and steward well the opportunities been given to you to do that. Mm-hmm. You had a line before your better story that probably will be the highlight of the podcast here. But you had a line talking about we grew and perhaps we grew too fast.
Yeah.
And so I want to pivot slightly on that because there's another aspect I know here and more of a way that you and I have been connected. So you have grown fast in a lot of ways, and yet you've grown in some very interesting ways recently. And we work with one of your staff members, Tara, who is an absolute phenomenal person. And she does the job of, I don't know, Seth, you know, when I first met her, I was like, this lady does the job of 5 people. And then it was like 10. And like, I don't know if I've got a top end now. I'm thinking it's like 25, 50. Like every time I meet her, it's like kind of climbs up by tens in terms of the amount of roles that she's playing. But she's doing that leveraging a technology that is on the lips of everybody right now. I'm fascinated by that juxtaposition. Here's somebody who is an entrepreneur and applies that to ministry. That in itself is a fascinating combination. And I know people like that, and that's really fascinating to me. But now we're going to add a second level to that, which is an entrepreneur who's applied that to ministry, who has a nose, if you will, an instinct for technology that can leverage what you're doing, both an entrepreneurial sense, but in this case, an entrepreneurial sense in a ministry sense. So talk a little bit about what Tara does and what you do and about a passion that I know you have because you're helping us with doing some of that.
Yeah, I just, you know, I love leverage. Leverage is, you know, it's something that you, with your brute strength, you can do X, but with leverage, you can do 10X or 100X. AI is that. AI is leverage. Social media is leverage too. For good and for evil. And the question is, it's a tool. How are you going to use that tool? So I just have always been fascinated with different tools. And And so when I saw AI come along and I saw the potential, I began to delve into it. And what I've seen is that, oh my goodness, this is a tool that's going to irrevocably change education. I love education. I love health. Those two fields, I think, are ripe for disintermediation, for change. And, you know, that, and one of the reasons that I wanted to work with you, Jonathan, is that I, in listening to your podcast, I saw that you believe that too. You may not be as deep into AI, but you recognize that college is not working anymore, that classrooms are dead. And, you know, I agree. I mean, they were dead for me back when I was in college. I was like, get me out of here. But with AI, you can build customized curriculum for an individual that's attuned to their learning style, that's attuned not just to their level of curiosity, but also to kind of the timeframes and what they need to be incentivized with to grow at an optimum rate. So, man, as I've delved into it and I saw what you're already doing, I thought that you guys would be great partners to come along. And that's why I began asking, you know, what are you doing with AI? You hadn't been doing much. And I thought, this is worth my time just to help you guys to assimilate the potential of this thing. And I do it because I'm a learner and also because I think this is so much bigger than just my little pool that I fish out of or the pool that you fish out of. This is about a hinge in history, and it's going to change everything about education. The sooner we get our arms around it, you know, what is ethical AI? How do we appropriate our human morality and our, you know, God-given spirit to change the world using AI as opposed to sticking our heads in the sand? And so that's what I'm about. And, you know, we've started a thing called Journey School. It takes young people on a journey, a mission, but also gives them AI-directed curriculum and tutors and teaches them to code, teaches them to make a difference in the world. And I think that that's the opportunity before us, is that to not just kind of learn information. That's always been kind of the thing that higher education was going to do. We're going to give you information. Information is free now. What is needed is relationships and experience and purpose. Those are the things that higher education, the soft tissue of it, of higher education, that's where we need to specialize. And that's why I'm partnering with you guys. I know that you get it. And I want to be a part of, you know, your legacy, especially the homeschool moms and dads that want to send their kids somewhere where they can trust. And so I'm probably, it's a little scattershot, but I wanted you to hear just my passion as well as kind of what I see is on offer before us.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that you can top your earlier thing when I said, tell me a story, but give us an example, because I think that, first of all, you've been very gracious and generous in your time, and we've learned a lot through, I just was on the class last night with the AI group and that we're teaching and listened to Tara speaking and immediately got off. And instead of going back into the house and having dinner, which I hadn't had yet, tried three things, was like, I didn't know it did that. And that's just really interesting and sort of changed some stuff. But give us an example, something that you're doing with AI, because, and let me frame this a little bit for you, Seth. I think that there's two broad reactions to AI. One is people who are very fearful of it, right? So they see things that I don't know are untrue, but they see those things magnified, the loss of humanity, the dangers, all those things. The other people that are infatuated with this, and this can be both good and bad. I mean, they can go to the extremes and you get nice, you know, lovely stories about people that commit suicide because AI told them to. That's one end of it. But you also have people that are using it to run businesses and entrepreneurships and things like that. And then somewhere in the middle, most of us are trying to go, okay, I know that this smartphone came in and changed my life. And I know this is kind of the same way. How do I go about not missing the opportunities here healthily in you know, to integrating this into my life, but it's in the shadow of a bunch of people who did not healthily integrate things like social media and technology and all those kinds of things. Right. Okay, so that's the framework. From my perspective, you're somebody who, if you're infatuated, it's certainly on the positive side, but you've very thoughtfully integrated AI in ways that have been unbelievably productive. Yeah. And I think that comes from your entrepreneurial, but also with background, but then you have this ministry kind of sense of the spirit and connection to God that gives some really interesting guardrails to that. And that puts you in a fascinating position in my mind, because it's somebody who says, I'm using AI to do this. And it's coming from a position that I go, that's really worth paying attention to. Okay, so that's the framework. That's the background. tell us a little bit about you personally. What are some of the things that either from a business standpoint or even a personal standpoint, you've seen AI giving you some bigger returns than expected?
First of all, I want to validate the fears. Like it's true. AI could kill us. And I say that's why ethical AI is so important. It's why our best and brightest, you know, Christian young people need to master AI so that they can help to govern this thing. It's a tool. It's like a great assistant, like having the world's greatest assistant beside you. And you can either ignore that person, that AI, or you can deploy them. And so I while recognizing the fear, I think that like any good tool, you've got to master it and you've got to deploy it in a way that the things that only humans can do are used to help govern how the tool is used. So what are those things? You know, there's certainly judgment and moral judgment and ethics. We can laugh, we can hug, we can cook good meals. You know, there are things that only humans can do. We can empathize, we can have deep conversations, we can pray, we can worship. Like, you're not going to replace any of that with an AI. But what I found that AI is especially good at, it can assess and analyze and sort. It can find trends. It can do the things that are correlative, correlating one thing to another. My father was a doctor, and he was a pathologist, and he would pattern match these slides. And here's a healthy cell, and here is, you know, a pathology, a sick cell, and that's how they would diagnose illness. Well, the best pathologist now is an AI. And same thing with radiology. You know, you've got all these different professions that are going to be either replaced or greatly augmented. Where I've seen, you asked me for a specific example, and we're just replacing ordinary jobs like an HR job with AI, and we're automating things that are required, you know, those competencies that I was describing of assessing and sorting and looking at trends and analyzing, they exist in every vertical, whether it's, you know, marketing or HR or management or sales or operations. You look at all of those have got an analytical component. It can be replaced. And that's kind of the boring stuff. So you can now look at the bigger picture of how it's applied. So when our HR person quit, and that might have been a $70,000 a year job, Tira built an AI that replaced it. So there's $75,000 in our pocket. And we've been able to do that up and down the organization. This is just in the last 6 months. I mean, I don't know if we're late to the party or not. My desire is that we would be the place to go. And I want to involve, you know, you guys in this too, that when people think of how do I grow in AI and learn to follow Jesus at the same time and apply AI to his kingdom, they think of Unbound or they think of Journey School. They think of a place that is deeply involved in the application of the tool to the world's biggest problems. And we've built a website on the world's biggest problems that I'm hoping to involve the church in solving. And I'm just saying, pick one of these. Here's 25 problems. What do you care about? Is it hunger? Is it water? Is it sickness? Is it education? Where do you want to make a difference? And each one of those, there's all kinds of ways that you could make a difference if you're paired and partnered with people that are already engaged and have cycles and years in solving the problem and can apprentice you. So I don't know, there's so much more I could say in terms of, you know, practical dollars. I could talk to you about my investments in health and the way that doctors are now moving from a concept of kind of dealing with chronic disease, reactive, to a proactive preventative model of healthcare, where we're working with the people who are, you know, trying to just not manage illness, but manage health. And so that's there's just so many opportunities for those that will take this point in time and use it to kind of jump to the front of the line and begin to demonstrate the capacity of a young person who is passionate about changing in the world. I'll tell you just how far can this go? About seven years ago, met a young gal that graduated through our program. and didn't pay any special attention to her. She is now managing the DeepMind project for Google. So there's one of the cutting edge AIs. She's managing it. And, you know, it could be anybody listening to my voice right now. If you've got a problem you care about, you can go make a difference, but you're going to have to dive in and begin to just ask the question. And you can ask AI this question: how can I make a difference? You know, just get in the water and begin swimming and you'll learn.
Well, I can testify to that. I had already, David and I actually did a little practicing on podcasting by doing a podcast a year or so on AI that forced us to do a lot of research and learn some things about it. And then we applied some of that. To be frank, I had sort of coasted off of that a little bit. And Seth, you challenged me, and some of the stuff we're working on challenged me to get back into it. I had a really interesting week last week where I was late for some content that we had to create. I had the content ready, but I have slides that we have designed by various people. And it was the situation where, would they have designed them for me? Yes. Was I too embarrassed to ask because of the lateness of the date? Also, yes. And yeah. So that ended up causing me to use AI to design them. And then in the process, discovered all kinds of capabilities that I didn't know was there. Maybe I'd heard about, but I never actually experienced. And so then that whole process made some of the things that I've been learning about and thinking about make sense. And so there is an aspect here of, you know, diving and doing it, which seems like something I should have instinctively known from a project-based education company. But there you go. Sometimes you have to be reminded of things. Seth, thank you for coming on. And for all those listening, go to adventures.org, which is the Adventures and Missions website, as sort of a testimony to both the speed and the flexibility of Seth's organization. While we're recording this, Melissa has just come through Jamaica. Right. That would be the storm, Hurricane Melissa. And I can see that Seth's site already has help relief efforts for Melissa in Jamaica on the site. So in terms of instant reaction, you've got that. But if you want to do two things, get a picture for the kinds of scale of the things that Seth's organizations represent, you can learn that there. But also, if you're interested in being involved in those things, and I would encourage you to do that. We've had at least one alumni, one friend that I know outside of Unbound, and the sister of one of our current Unbound students have been involved in various programs, especially World Race through Adventures and Missions. And we just delighted to endorse them, delighted to be, you know, introducing you to Seth, and really want to encourage you to go to that site, learn everything you can there, and take a look at all the things Seth's doing. So Seth, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your mentorship and your guidance. And it was a pleasure and an honor to have you on the podcast.
Thanks, Jonathan. David, it's been a pleasure, and look forward to continuing to follow you guys and join with you in various projects.
Well, we hope that you learned about missions and a little bit about Seth. We hope you learned about Adventures and Missions and things that they do, including some of the experiences that they've had. And I hope that our conversation about AI is perspective shifting. Now, when I say perspective shifting, I'm not necessarily arguing to change whatever position you have on AI. Instead, I'd like to broaden it. And certainly in talking to Seth, he has done that to me. What is, I think, most admirable with Seth and his approach is that he is not somebody who approaches this and say, oh, this is a fantastic technology, it's going to be great. Instead, as you heard in this conversation, he's approached it and said, yeah, like everything else, this is two sides to it. But it's here, and it has some amazing pieces that we can use, but we need to do that wisely and intentionally. And it's been fascinating working with him. It's been fascinating listening to him, learning from him. And I hope you got a little bit of that from the conversation, as well as a little piece of kind of the vision and the work that Seth does.
Yeah, it is a combination that you would never really expect to hear, somebody coming from a missions background and then having such a passion for AI. But just the way that he puts it there, it makes a lot of sense in that he's just has a passion for, you know, building things, has that entrepreneurial spirit, and he applies that to the kingdom of God and has just looked at AI and said, hey, this is a powerful tool to be able to do that. Let's use this to the fullest extent to build the kingdom of God in a way that glorifies him. And I think that's a really valuable perspective.
So there's a world, there's people that are really good at what they do. And those people are always interesting to talk to. They're fascinating and, you know, savants or experts in their fields and all that stuff. What has always been interesting to me, perhaps because I'm not a savant, so maybe I aspire to the other side, is the hybridization. Somebody who has disparate skills in different areas and brings them together in a unique way. There's something uniquely human about that. There's something uniquely God-driven by that, where you kind of see like, wow, those things would never go together, and here they are. But then there's some unique results. Seth is very much that kind of person. Somebody who has the kind of entrepreneurial skills that could easily run a massive company and do big business type things. but who has a keen and passionate spirit for missions. So those two things are already an interesting hybridization, although not unknown. There's multiple examples of phenomenal entrepreneurs who also are deeply involved in missions and relief work and those kinds of things. But then there's the third component, which is somebody who has an instinctive understanding of and ability to apply the entrepreneurial instincts combined with the missional passion and drive and purpose, and then blend that with technology. And that is a bit more unusual. Again, I'm sure it's not completely unheard of, but my experience is not necessarily commonplace. And that's what you get with Seth. And so to listen to a man who has equal, maybe not equal, but significant experience and depth in each of those fields and brings them together and melds them constantly, that's something worth paying attention to, something worth listening to, and we hope something you benefit from in this conversation. So as we leave this, you know, let me leave you with a couple of thoughts here. One, check out Adventures and Missions. They do some really interesting things. And if you're a young person looking to do something international, I don't know that there's any place that we could be more excited about promoting than Adventures and Missions in terms of just the scale of the programs that they run. If you're a young person looking for your next educational step, then we should tell you that you should look at beunbound.us. And there's some interesting ways that those two things blend. And if you are interested in that, come talk to us and we'll be happy to help you walk through that. If you're interested in AI, know that the team from Adventures and Missions teaches and runs and administers our AI track inside of our Ascend program, which is our post-high school program. And you can find more information about that on our website as well. And if you want to know how those things work, well, go to the websites, learn about it from that way. Ask AI. Both of us have done some work on trying to optimize our sites for AI, so AI should give you a pretty accurate answer. And stick around after our conversation here to hear one of the testimonies from our students in terms of the Ascend program. And certainly you can find lots of testimonies if you go to the Adventures and Missions site and folks that are doing stuff there. Thank you so much for your time. We hope that you benefited from this as much as David and I have. And until next time, be unbound.
Hi, everyone. My name is Abby Huseman, and I just finished my Ascend Foundations year. And looking back on the year, the impact that Ascend has had on me has been amazing. Like, I am not the same person that signed up for Ascend last June. Before I even thought about Ascend, I knew what I wanted to do after high school. I wanted to become a pilot, go to flight school, the whole nine yards. I started ground school, it was going great, and then I started having seizures. And you can't fly if you have seizures, so the Lord closed the door on that. And after that, I felt stuck. I had no idea what I wanted to do. I had no interest that I loved enough to find, have a career in. And so I joined Ascend. And it was absolutely amazing. One of the things that really stood out to me this year was something that a speaker said at Base Camp, which is our second live event. And it was just push a button. And that has stuck with me ever since he said that. Essentially, it's try something new. It's okay to fail. You're going to learn from it. Pick yourself back up. It'll be okay. And I used to be so afraid of pushing buttons that I just wouldn't. And I would miss out on so many amazing things in life because I was so afraid. And now, am I still afraid to push buttons? Absolutely. I don't know if that fear is ever going to go away. But I still do it because I know that it's okay if I fail. Or maybe I'll love it and it'll be amazing. An instance for that actually happened this year was each student has to complete a personal project in the Ascend year. And mine was to train for and run half marathon. And I started to do that, and then my seizures came back, and my doctor said to stop running, so I had to change products entirely, and I decided, well, okay, let's just get my wilderness first responder certification. So I did, and I absolutely loved it. I had no idea that I would love it as much as I did, and so now, this fall, I'm going to get my EMT, and then I'll possibly go down the route to become a paramedic, and it is just so cool how the Lord just, you will make your plans, but he will direct your steps and he will take you to where he wants you to go. And Ascend really helped me with that this year. And not only that, but the community is amazing. The friends you will make are fantastic. And I did not regret a single second of joining Ascend at all.